best-selling books, Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living Bliss, and You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. Isn't that important in these times? And his latest book, Healing the Heart and Soul. And Michael is regularly featured as a keynote speaker at some of the world's largest conferences, as well as being on radio, television, and various internet programs, in addition to being the cover story in Evolve. Michael has been featured in magazines like the Yoga Journal, Sedona Journal, and the Whole Self Times. And he's traveled throughout the world conducting thousands of classes, lectures, and workshops on sexuality, spirituality, relationships, healing, and is one of the few teachers in the Western world with over 30 years of tantric teaching and practice. He is the leading facilitator and advocate of spiritual tantra, or what is called middle path tantra. And Michael's vast knowledge and wisdom, combined with his personal warmth, humor, and integrity, have earned him the title of teacher's teacher and healer's healer from students, teachers, authors around the world. And he's not only a respected spiritual teacher, but also one of the world's most intuitive and successful healers and counselors. His powerful and insightful practice sessions have transformed the lives of many thousands of people. Oh, just so, yes, we'll hear from him. You can get books and some actually turn to him for private sessions. Oh, get ready for something wonderful. Welcome back, Michael.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me on.
Ah, it's a great, great pleasure. We got started when you were on late last year with some real breakthroughs about tantra and spirituality taken to different levels, and now we're coming into this time of year with Valentine's Day, and that naturally stimulates people to be thinking of love and romance. And I'm wondering just what thoughts you might have to share from your extensive background about people. Is there, let's say, a couple of contrasts? It would be folks that have been in relationship for quite some time to help keep things going or re-spark, and then for people that are new to each other, it's a new friendship, and it may not be something they're going to be involved sexually, but maybe there's some tantra-type secrets that can help stimulate new friendships in beautiful ways.
Well, you know, what's amazing to me is, first of all, you know, as you're saying this, what is tantra? What is sacred sexuality? What is spirituality? What is God? You know, all these topics become so diverse and so confusing to so many people. So the first thing I'd like to clarify, and if I miss any part of your question, please bring it back. But the you know, the first thing to clarify is, especially this time of the year, because you brought that up, it's so appropriate. You know, first of all, we're starting a new year. I mean, we're still in the beginning of a new year. So wouldn't it be nice if everybody could think to themselves, you know, I want this year to not be the same as other years. I'd like this year to be different, and that includes my relationships. Yes, my job, parenting, and whatever else I'm doing, I would like it to be just different. I would love it to be more more peaceful, more easy, more abundant and prosperous. That would be great for everybody. But certainly, added to a new year, I would love my relationships to be better. And then adding to that, we're going into February here, and soon enough, we have Valentine's Day. So it's very apropos for us to consider how we might want our romantic life to be better. And then some people assume that based on their family culture, their religion, their background, whatever it may be, they assume those things should control or inhibit, you know, whatever it is that's going on in our lives, as though our culture or our race or family or religion or whomever should just do the same thing they've done. And most of them haven't had healthy, fulfilling relationships.
No.
So we really need to reconsider who we are, what we're doing, and what's not working. And if it's not working, and it didn't work for other people, I mean, if our parents had the same old grind job and got a gold watch after 50 years, and still don't have a retirement like they thought, maybe we need to reconsider that. Well, in the context of relationship, if our parents had shame around intimacy, and we're not even just talking about sexuality, we're talking about even just love, affection, intimacy, openness, you know, conversation, just maybe that's not the way we want to repeat it. Well, the real drag is that, you know, if we're used to that and or our partners were, I call it hired on to be our partners, under those conditions, it's like, kind of like you get hired for a certain job and, you know, 5 years later they change the job description and you don't like it. Well, you're right because you were hired on under certain conditions, so you're right to be upset a little bit because they changed it, but they did change it. So one person's going to be fighting to keep it as was, and the other's going to say, but something has to be different. And nobody's wrong, it's just they don't see it the same way. So if we want to change our lives and our relationships, and that includes intimacy, and that includes sexuality, we have to first take an assessment of what's not working and consider that, make a little checklist or something, you know, a little self-inventory. But we should also consider how to communicate that to our partners, and I mean patiently, because remember, they were hired on under the old way, the old rules, the old conditions, so they're going to be sometimes saying, you know, who are you to tell me that we have to change this and that and the other? So it has to be with grace and patience, which also helps us grow. Nevertheless, with patience, love, tolerance, we still have to be determined to know where we're going. We still have to have absolute determination. Our partners, our family, that's why I wrote the one book and called it, You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. And what I'm saying in that title is that even when you try to improve your life, there are so many people that are willing to tell you that you're wrong for it, or, you know, or that something's wrong with you, or that you're selfish. And if you are, take an assessment and say, gee, I guess I'm being selfish when I said this to you or did that to you. But a lot of times you're not being selfish. You're actually waking up, and you have to make a determination to do that. And that's in every major thought system, and Old Testament, New Testament, every major thought system and religion support our finding a healthier way to live. So others may not agree, but we have to make a determination. So once again, I'll say, we start with what's not working, and you know, sort of this job, this relation, or even my sexuality or my sexual life. And it doesn't matter who I'm intimate with or how many, as much as, is it working? Now, we get that straight first. So, and I'm saying all this because I'm trying to clarify that the conversation about Tantra, you know, I speak at all these conferences or centers, and, you know, some people will say, as soon as you write a book on something, that's what you're known for. If you wrote a book on fitness, that's what you know. And then if you try to teach on something else, you'll have a hard time wrapping your mind around it because you're the guy that wrote something on fitness. Well, for me, I teach about everything. And really, if I summarize it, it's about how to become a better person, how to be more spiritual, have a deeper connection with God, but in a very practical way, not a religious, dutiful way, not with a lot of rules and obligations and you know, shames and whatever, but in a very thriving way, in a very fulfilling way. So how do we do that? How do we come to a place of laughter and joy and abundance and jubilation and celebration in every part of our life? So sexuality is only one. It's not the thing I teach on. It's a thing that's included in the concept of living a more fulfilling life. And so my idea is to say, not like the word Tantra could be confused with an old this or that or a religion or even some people, because Tantra is so such a bizarre topic that some people practice it, like the Dalai Lama, as a religion that has nothing to do with human contact. It's really more of a meditative, alchemical kind of an experience inside of yourself where you sort of learn to move energy and enhance your energy field and become more peaceful inside, recognize compulsions and so forth and heal them and love them, you know, and gracefully release them. But it also involves learning to balance your right and left brain, your masculine and feminine self, and so on and so on. Well, the same goes for, there's on the other extreme, there's a sexual tantra out there where people are kind of, instead of doing it all in a meditation within themselves, the joining of male and female, there's a plenty of people out there that practice it as a male and female joining, like a sexual union. to a point where I call it hypersexual, which we touched on just last time we were speaking. But so Tantra itself is something I refer to more often as sacred sexuality, meaning no matter what your religion, culture, background, or sexual preference, we all need to learn how to live more sacredly, cook more sacredly, parent more sacredly, educate more sacredly, and yes, sexual interactions more sacredly. So we really need to return to Eden. We really need to return to sacred living, and that includes sexuality. So it's not a thing that I push, per se, like Tantra or the religion of Tantra or the Hindu Tantra or Buddhist Tantra. Those just happen to be included under the same umbrella because some of those are advocates for a greater sacred living or greater sacred experience. And so to wrap all that up, it's not a thing so much as a concept. And so I would say, just to get us started, is to the audience members and so forth, is really don't call it my advice to some folks, if they have partners or family members who wouldn't like the word or understand the word Tantra, just talk about slowing down and getting to know each other more. Deepen your conversations, but to do that, you have to slow down. You have to make eye contact with your children when they come in and say, look what I did at school, instead of that's nice, and moving on. Did you even see? Did you make eye contact? Did you take a breath as they spoke so that you centered in and became present with them? Did you see what they drew, why they drew it? What was it about? Think about this. Historically, this is kind of a fun point, which is once upon a time, a child came home, shows his father, look what I did at school. Now, the father, instead of going, that's nice, and moving on, the father looked at the painting, the drawing, the coloring drawing, and said, wow, what is that? And the child's describing. And there's a picture of a woman, a girl, kind of floating up, looks like she's kind of, floating through the sky, because when kids draw, sometimes things are floating up in the air, or, the sun has little lines instead, to represent sun's rays and so forth. So it's that right brain kind of abstractism of the child's mind. And the father says, that's beautiful, that's interesting, and what's that? And that's, that's the person floating. And when the dad said, what do you call the drawing? The child said, it's called Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And it became a song when the father went home, when the father went aside and wrote a song about that little child's drawing. The father was present enough to experience what the child drew. They didn't just hear, look what I drew, and then respond with, that's nice. They experienced it. So we slow down, and of course that was John and Julian Lennon. So we slow down, we connect, we listen. And the same goes with intimacy. So I'm saying, asking everybody, slow down with intimacy. You have sex, and what people, religious people are going to say, you can only have so much sex, you do it out of obligation, you owe it to your partner. You do it for procreation. Does that sound like slowing down, being present, and expanding the experience? No. It's duty. It's from their mind. It's from obligation. It's rules. It's laws. And that's partly why the ancients created Tantra. It was to rebel against the rules of the priests, in Brahmanism and Hinduism and even Buddhism, that became so serious and rule-driven. They broke away and said, no, let's just relax and enjoy, and sometimes went overboard. But in balance, I'm asking, that we learn to slow down. We learn to slow down the conversation, the eye contact, breathing once in a while, and in intimacy, when it comes to intimacy, before the actual act of sex, let's say, it's who you're touching and what are you touching them with? What does it feel like? I mean, are you just rubbing something, or it could be their shoulder, but what does it feel like? Be grateful that their shoulder is there for you to touch and let them know what it feels like. I really love and always admire this particular curve. And your skin is so softer. Whatever it happens to be, notice it. The way Lennon might have noticed these details in this picture and then wrote a song about it. It helped change music for everybody, by the way. And our whole pop culture is changed partly from what was happening in that song. So look at the influence that comes from slowing down. So slowing down, you don't have to go out and study Tantra. You don't have to get books and so forth on Tantra. You can. It'll enhance what you know, but be careful, because somebody writes a book or does a video called Tantra, and it's nothing but, it could be hypersexual, or it could be excessively religious, and you don't know what you're getting. So just look at it. Check out the table of contents. See if it's covering what you want. Maybe read an excerpt online or in the book itself, But breathe. Slow down and breathe, even when you're going to pick a book on the topic, or a teacher on the topic, or a practitioner on the topic, or a workshop on the topic. But learning to slow down and become more sacred in everything is well worth it. And so, intimately speaking, we slow down the touch, even talk to each other and give appreciation, share like dialogue, conversation, connection verbally before there's even sexual interaction. But when it progresses too, if it does, it doesn't always, but if it does progress to sexual interaction, slow down, move slowly. I don't care what the movies say, and I don't care what the magazines on the newsstand say. Don't listen to them. Slow down. Well, they say in this magazine you're supposed to do fast, and you're supposed to do this and be sexy, and it's not about hyper, it's not about hot. They try to sell you on hot sex. Sacred sex is cool or warm. It is not hot, because hot burns you out. You want to have cool, it's longer lasting, slower moving, you'll last longer. Obviously, metaphorical, that the male lasting longer. You slow down, you feel everything, you pause now and again, you share, you connect. And I'm not trying to make it sound overly, mushy to some people. They may be, oh my God, that's all that airy-fairy stuff. It isn't. It's a very powerful experience to make love in the truest sense. And it's not all the, woo-woo or kind of the mushy romantic stuff. It includes that, but it's far more. You actually will feel more sensation when you slow down. It'll actually be more of a turn-on to be with your partner. I'll close this by saying, I had somebody once say, Michael Lake, they called and they said, my partner and I, and the sexual part is just not happening. And they gave me a general description that fits most people's sex lives. And at some point, I just described an exercise that when they're making love, connect and move very, very slowly. Start off at a regular pace and then ask the woman to guide the partner to slow down. Doesn't matter if her partner is female or male or whatever. You ask them to slow down whatever they're doing. And then a little bit more, very gracefully, very tactfully, lovingly say, okay, that's beautiful. Can you go just a little slower so I can feel you more? It's a very tactful way of saying it, instead of correcting them. So you slow them down, and I describe this, and you slow them down, and you slow them down, and the more they're moving slowly, the more you're feeling more, and then your body will respond. Even listeners listening to this, some of them are actually able to feel what I'm saying. And you slow down some more, and you slow down, and whatever pace you started at, you're now at about 20% of what you were. Maybe 10, but maybe at the most 20% the pace. And you'll find, just when you think it's slow enough, you probably need a little slower. And then when you get to that place, probably just a tad slower, and then something magical happens where all of a sudden, I call it like seaweed in the ocean. You cannot separate the seaweed from the water underneath, when you're beneath the waves. It's all moving completely together. If the water moves, the seaweed moves. And so there's this movement where the two melt into each other, and they're moving as one. They're graceful. And it's a dance. It's a beautiful, beautiful dance that starts to happen. And you, once you know how to do this portion or master how to be connected, all of a sudden you can have fun and you can speed up for a little bit and then always come back and find each other again. So the passionate and the faster, so to speak, is fine. But only when you know how to find each other and how to do so by slower movement. So this creates everything that Tantra would have ever been trying to create. Because the word Tantra means to weave together. So it means to find the two people, to join them together. Not just people, but even the honoring of each other's spiritual self. So it's a joining of spirit. It's a joining of people. It's a joining of respect. Everything that, you could say is weaving together, weaving everything. So hopefully that gives us a good start.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate that so much, and especially the way you bring it back to spirituality. Through Robert Fry, one of my teachers that I think you know of, he helped to summarize it for me with this Sufi song helped to remind us about being present, and we'd look in the partner's eyes and each say to each other, how beautiful this moment to share the holy presence with you. We open our hearts to this moment and let the light of our love shine through. And so, and you're just helping us to remember that through talking about John Lennon being present with his son Julian so that he could see the depth that was there. And then that led to an awesome experience for all of us in that song, and to take that time to be present with this person of just being there without having to do anything or be a particular way. Just, oh, it's you. Hello.
Right. That's right. Isn't that amazing? And you mentioned Robert Fry, and I would say the late Robert Fry, he had an authenticity. And when it comes to the world of Tantra, especially in the Western world, there's a lot of charlatans or some that are just blatantly hypersexual teachers and authors. And I'm certainly not one to be sparse on words about what I think of that, because it's completely, you know, unhealthy and manipulative most of the time. Now, mind you, when someone says to the world, to their students, to whatever, I really just believe in this. This is what I am. I enjoy this. I believe. At least they're saying it honestly. That's better than hiding it and then, you know, breaking all the rules underneath, you know, or behind the curtain. But I still, it misrepresents what's called sacred sexuality. Call it sexuality. Call it explorative. Call it some other word. But don't call it sacred, because when you are not conscious, when you believe you have to have sex with each of your students, when you think that the healing comes from the act itself and not from the joining, from the trust, from the love and respect, then you've missed it all. The healing that comes supposedly, and the greatest joining that comes from Tantra, starts with loving respect for your partner. Even if your partner is a so-called client or student, it still, by definition, to call it sacred, would have to start with loving respect, which would mean you probably wouldn't be having intercourse with each of them. Yes, in the world of Tantra, it is understood that sexuality can be very healing and very sacred, which is contrary to some people's beliefs, so immediately they may not agree with where I'm going, because there is a sacredness, there is a healing, there is a component that's authentic based on the definition of Tantra and needs to be allowed for them, I mean, to each his own. So Tantra, yes, it can be sexual for some people and for some teachers and so on. However, what I challenge is don't call it sacred if you're not holding the components of sacred, which is a loving respect. And if you have loving respect, then you think of the person's spiritual needs more than your physical needs. The other person's spiritual needs would come first if you have an ounce of understanding about the concept of sacred. So you go there first. Loving respect is rule number one. Rule number two is safety. Safety doesn't just mean safe sex. It means that we can trust each other to abide by our needs. And I know your needs, and I back off when you need this. I come forward when you need that, and so forth. And safety kind of progresses to responsibility. If you were a friend, a student, a partner, whatever, and I wanted to do some certain things with you, and you did not understand those things, if you're not able to maintain your level of responsibility, then we can't be safe and we're not experiencing loving respect. So we both have to have a certain maturity rather than the teacher just simply taking what they want, or the partner even doing and taking what they want, because that means you're now in a place of being a predator or a user. But we have to both be mature and responsible. And then we also have to communicate is the next rule. Where we're able to talk and communicate, and are you okay? Communicating what you need through moans and groans, but also through dialogue, through feedback, you know? And here's what I'm feeling right now, not feeling really safe for some reason, don't know what it is. Oh, okay. So we back off and we dance a different dance, and we stay safe, we stay loving and respectful, and we stop doing what we were doing that triggered you, and we talk about what it was, and we help it heal. So then tomorrow, maybe, meaning proverbial tomorrow down the road, we're at a new level of consciousness thanks to the level of love and respect and safety and responsibility that we put into our experience with one another. And once we have those components, the loving respect, the safety, the responsibility, and the communication, a few of those in one word is called boundaries, but when you have those, you can actually do the fifth thing, which is releasing, letting go, like surrendering to one another. See, it's not hi, nice to meet you. Come on in. What's your name? Okay, let's go ahead and take our clothes off and start making love. We haven't even built the foundation of a psychological or spiritual or physical or emotional safe place, a sacred space to be in. You're just following my lead because you assume I know what I'm doing. But if I keep having sex with people without deepening the experience first, not so-called during, build it first, then it can't really be sacred. So, you know, it's an unhealthy experience. And back to my point, which was Robert Fry is one of the few, and I mean one of, you know, in all my years of doing this in the Western world, he might be one of two males that I believe are respectable or safe in the work that he did. He had a very different level of understanding what Tantra was, and unfortunately, he's not one that wrote some you know, great books on it. You know, so you don't have a real real catalog of him as a teacher that he was, but he's popped up here and there, co-writing this, an article here and a book there, or a video you can find him featured. And what a beautiful, authentic energy he has. And the fact that I'm not naming a lot of other teachers might tell you something. I know a lot of them, and I'm not saying that there aren't any out there that are practitioners that are really authentic. I'm sure there are some out there. I would only know of some of those, and I know that they're here and there, they're okay, but I'm speaking in terms of the big names and the big teachers and the big authors. Of those, you might expect them to be the expert, the ones you can count on. I mean, geez, if you want to learn cooking and you go to an expert, you can count on them to be a good cook or whatever the topic is. In this topic, unfortunately, the big names aren't the people you can count on. They're often very unhealthy. There are a few more women that have an authenticity to them. There's, you know, because they have a little more awareness and caution about what has been done harmfully to people, especially women, with this subject. So they're a little bit more sensitive. But, you know, one has to be really careful of who you study with, and I'm not at all promoting myself here. I didn't say, you know, come to me. I may not be the best person for somebody. Every student that is interested in this topic, first of all, you don't need any of us. If you have a partner or an intimate friend or whatever it is, one or more in your life, whoever you date tomorrow or 10 years from now, slow down, commit to getting to know one another even before you're intimate. Get to know one another romantically or personally. Grow your relationship. Don't have sex. Grow the relationship until sex is the next obvious organic piece. And then when you're having sex, let that grow into more and more profound experiences. If you move slowly to get to know one another, you grow a relationship. As the relationship grows, it grows the fruits from that particular thing that you've let mature. So it should and could be an organic process. I'm not suggesting it has to take 10 years. For some of us, it can be very a very quick thing in a sense, meaning if we're responsible and so forth. But if you have a pattern of thinking that getting to know somebody quickly works for you, and yet 3 months later, they've abandoned you or betrayed you, you probably aren't doing it right. So you need to make yourself moving even slower. It's almost like the addict that has to be far more cautious about where they go. I know you're mature. I know you can go into a bar and not drink because you're in recovery. But why put yourself in that position? So we really have to learn to fast from relationships if they've not gone well. And fasting means not just go without. It means learning about yourself while you're abstaining for a day, a week, a month, a year, or whatever. I don't think you have to go into 10 years because that's not fasting, that's starving. So you just go, you know, you go as far as you can to where you're learning about yourself and then progressing and moving forward. But this is beautiful to share about this because there's a consistent theme, and it involves responsibility and getting to know yourself. It involves developing healthier boundaries, whether it's with your partner, your family, your religion, or whomever, your teachers of Tantra. And it involves slowing down, connecting more. And all of those few things change our lives completely. They're not just neat ideas. They're the only things that make us healthier. Having a healthy relationship with spirit or God, a healthy relationship with yourself, which means having good boundaries and slowing down and so forth, and then with others. You know, so this is the Holy Trinity, healthiness with God, self, and others.
Wow. This is exquisite. As you were talking, Michael, one of the things that's coming to mind is the modern culture, this idea of speed, everything go fast. We want to produce this quicker, and in the Olympics, we want to run faster, jump higher, antenna, whatever, hit
yeah.
the ball faster, all this stuff with speed. And so it's sort of like, okay, well, what's the difference between meeting someone and having a quick kiss versus taking the time that you're talking about to actually be there with this person as not just someone that can be kissed, but this divine essence, this part of the holy presence of the Almighty Creator of everything, everywhere, and that you now have this moment with that, and I'm just wondering how, you know, if we start to connect at that level, do you think people may end up getting more fulfilled, even though they may not be having sexual encounters, but having encounters that are deeply meaningful?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, well, see, as soon as you bring the name slash word God into a conversation, people assume you're going to get religious on them and hit them with a bunch of rules. And the truth is, you know, God is like the wind itself. It blows, and it's an energy. It flows in and through our lives. It flows into our being and inspires us to write a poem or to write a song. It's usually, though, we try as humans, we try to capture and control that. And then if we try to catch God, which is a free-flowing energy, and it just blows like the wind, it just moves freely, but if we try to interpret God as we get a can with a lid, a jar with a lid, we go outside, the winds of God and inspiration are blowing and flowing, and we try to catch that in a jar, we put the lid on it, and then we label it. This is Catholicism jar. This is a jar of Muslim, you know, Islam. This is a jar of this, or a jar of rules. This is a jar of laws in this country, or whatever it is, laws of economics. We try to put God, which was originally a free-flowing thing, into a jar, label it, and then experience. How do you experience God if it's trapped in a jar and labeled? It can't be experienced. All you can do is look at it and have an opinion of what it might be if it could be released from the jar and experienced. But it just doesn't seem to work very well for people. They try to trap it, control it, limit it, etc., and it's just not going to work and be experienced to its fullest. So using the name or the word God gets us into trouble a lot of times because there's so many labels and definitions that people have, interpretations or whatever, you know, real special little ideas around it. Well, if we can just relax and say, you know, if there is a God, is it the God of fear, punishment, and so forth, as projected? Or, even the scriptures say, you know, God did not create fear in man, but instead a sound mind. So even though we're told all about the fear and so forth of God, we're actually being told, especially in the New Testament, about love, about forgiveness and healing and, you know, so it's a very different experience. And so if you can look at it, you know, it's kind of like if you're trying to predict the laws of, let's say, the finances and the stock market or whatever it happens to be, well, you'd be really, really wise. I mean, you'd be so much more prosperous if you knew how to read the signs of the times. And the same because you're looking at trends. So if you're looking on human standards and rules and so forth about trends, then we ought to look at the one that shows us that in the older days, the further you go back to a more primitive man, the more, heavy-handed, tough love the God was. And clearly that changed over time. It didn't cancel the old God out, but it canceled our interpretation or helped transmute it to a new level. The God of Jesus was not the same one you hear about, don't do this, don't do that, or else. And it's not because God changed its moods, so to speak, it's that mankind is more and more getting used to understanding. When we were primitive and lived by the sword, we needed to believe in a heavy-handed God that will just kick our butts if we hurt one another. Jesus comes around and teaches, now, I think you guys have gotten to a place where you can hear about love. Instead of being told, don't do this, that, and the other, I think you guys have grown and evolved to a place where you can hear about love and see demonstrations of forgiveness and peace and patience. Now, it's been another 2,000 years, so clearly, the trend, if you can see it, the trend is going in this direction, not reverting. It's going in the direction of more and more love and demonstrations of forgiveness and peace and so forth. That's why
St. Francis of Assisi become popular again in our time in pop culture, because that's the trend. People are wanting to learn simplicity, love, peace. They're learning to admire people like Mother Teresa, or, you know, because it's about service and love. So at the same time, the ego fights and speaks too. Evil, as some people would call it, for the ego. It fights to promote this selfishness, or as you called it, you know, the fast food world. And so you can go that way. It's just it doesn't fulfill you. A good nutritionist would only need seconds to tell you that fast food does not fulfill you in terms of your nutritional needs. It's just common sense. Well, believe it or not, fast sex, hot sex, the stuff they sell in the movies where people just rape each other and it's like, oh, it's so steamy. It is. It's steamy. It's so sexy. It's so beautiful. But what is it speaking to? The loving, respectful presence with and honoring and sacredness within each other? Or is it speaking to, that really speaks to my desire to abuse another person? That's what it is. The heavy-handed screwing that people do on the cinema, it's about abuse. I know it looks sexy, but the part of you that's getting turned on is the part of you that wants to be abused or abuse another. That's why porn can be so popular, because it speaks to all this sad, unfortunate, and even ill thought, you know, parts, the ill-thinking parts of mankind. And I'm not saying it should be suppressed. It needs to be healed, brought back to sacred. Because if somebody really knows sacred, it's not about boring and blah, 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 you know, sex. It's start and know how to connect, and then you can actually responsibly lovingly ravage each other. You can. And it might look the same as the other pair of people on the movies, but the difference is the one knows how to reconnect, redirect, slow down at any moment that something seems off or disconnected. They know how to, it'll look the same, but one is a very different intention and can do so many more things than the other, who just wants to get to it, and then they kind of lose themselves. And they have their experience, they have their release, and then they're done. Usually with the man releasing and the woman being left without. And she's gotten used to being left without a sense of true fulfillment.
And then we wonder, hearing that, Michael, about the battle between the sexes, and it's like, well, geez, no wonder.
Yeah, isn't that, you know, isn't that the way it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, geez, I can't understand why you'd be upset. I'm very happy.
So
this is truly... it's so important and profound. It's like, okay, notice all these things are out there, and then stand back for a moment and observe, take a look at the world we live in, how much patience, love, and tolerance and respect and trust and safety do we have versus the rape, the pillage, the terror, the destruction going on. And so, you know, to me, it's kind of interesting if you summarize and you go, well, there's this big mess going on without these qualities. And then you say, well, what have we been exposed to? And you're reminding us that these things that we've been exposed to and then told, you see that couple doing that and they're ripping their clothes off and they're breathing heavily and they're just, you know, having this hot passion. That's really as good as it gets, folks. And now you're explaining, well, that's just a reflection of another form of this anger expression and abuse versus the tenderness and the love that you'd see if we see the picture of a mother holding a child or Christ or Mother Teresa, that kind of tenderness, but that hasn't come over broad spectrum into the act of people getting acquainted with each other and then being intimate and sensual and sexual with each other based on that type of being.
That's right. Yeah, and people are going to learn everything that they learn. They're going to learn it the easy way or the hard way. And so somebody could listen to this show and say, you know, that's kind of interesting, that's kind of intriguing, and then the next day completely forget it and not pursue what we're talking about. They will still get it one day. It's just that instead of getting it by going, you know, this makes sense and I'm going to start making some changes, not only some inventory and clearing out of the old, but some implementing new ideas. You know, maybe I'll just sneak a little conversation in with my partner without having to overtly say, well, I heard somebody on the radio say that you need to be different. No, we don't want to do it that way. They might just implement it as, you know, I really enjoy our time together, and I would like to just kind of, you know, slow down when we're doing a little of this, or maybe we can sit down and eat more quietly, or whatever it is that feels right for them to implement with their children or at work or with their partners or whatever. But they can choose to implement it. What it'll do is bring a more positive charge into their life. For example, they implement one of these ideas. It can actually help slow down their nervous system, which is good for their health and eventually their immunity and their long run of health down the road. Slowing down might create more connection and conversation. Just this one area, like let's say inside the household, they just slow down a little. They're less stressed. They don't have the ulcers or the digestive issues they were having. Less bloating, less weakened immunity. All of a sudden, they're slowing down so much that they're noticing conversations are deepening. They now know where their kids are when they're going out, and even their teens. There's a deeper connection. There's a deeper caring. With our partners, you're learning what makes them tick. God, you know, you married them thinking that they were X, Y, and Z, and now you're finding that they're a lot more A, B, and C by just slowing down. And, you know, for example, if partners could make part of their Valentine's ritual to be more something like, you know, we have a conversation wherein I say to my partner, you know, can you tell me, I'm curious, you know, I heard someone tell me once, or I heard on TV once or whatever, somebody asked about this, and I never thought about it much. It's been coming up to me a lot lately, and I'm curious how much we know each other, and I'd like to ask you, can you tell me your greatest dreams? Because I don't want to assume, and I don't know that I know. What is your greatest hope in your life, your greatest dream? Because sometimes we think we know, and we usually do not. So your partner might say, really? Well, okay. And they respond and say, wow, you know, and do you know mine? Ha ha. You know, and you're making a playful conversation and you share yours. And then, full circle, you go the other direction. You say, okay, well, one more question. Would you be willing to share with me your greatest fears in life? Sometimes they won't or can't, which is really a sad statement because we're partners, we're life mates, and, you know, we're not able to really deep, we're not even talking about deep connecting sex. We're talking about conversation. If we can't get this piece done, we're really going to have to rethink things. And I don't mean you have to dump your partner. I'm just saying it really makes you think about where you are. So what is your deepest fear, and will they tell you? And you can say, all right, would it help if I go first? I'll give it a shot. Don't make it sound like you're an expert. Say, well, all right, let me think about it for a moment. My deepest fear, and vulnerably share that with this person. It's the same as vulnerably opening your body to make love. You know, and having sex and making love is far from just a physical thing or an anatomical thing. It's a physiological thing, too, but it's also an energetic thing, an emotional thing, a spiritual thing, and so forth. It's multidimensional. It really is. But it's only that if we notice that it's multidimensional. If our consciousness only notices one dimension, I want to have intercourse. That's it. My body gets this. It has a physiological response. That's it. Then primarily that's all the experience will be, even though there's the potentials of these other dimensions. Like science says, we actually live in several dimensions at once. But the sad thing is we're only aware of one. I mean, it's sad in some respects. It's healthy sometimes because we get overwhelmed being aware of too many things at once. But the healthier you become, the more capable you are of handling multi-dimensions. When all you can handle is one thing at a time, because you're so, for lack of a better word, no offense meant, dense or primal, then you really need just one thing at a time. You can grunt, have sex with your partner, and fall asleep. And if that's all you got in you, great. Start, you know, great. Knock yourself out. Have fun. But sadly, that's not all that's there, and we don't see the rest. So are we willing to move beyond the reptilian brain, beyond the primal man-woman, and find deeper and greater dimensions to each other? And it's amazing. You slow down while you're making love, and all of a sudden, the woman realizes she's allowing this man who maybe even, and I don't mean to be crude here, maybe even anatomically, he might have an average or slightly less than average penis size, but she will actually feel him further in her than someone else who had a larger penis. That's how bizarre this can be. It's almost surreal. You say, logically, that's not possible. But she actually feels more fulfilled from
having a multidimensional experience instead of just this base, one-sided dimensional or whatever experience that was all based on anatomy and physiology.
Wow. Yes. What a difference there is to take it to the different levels, all these nuances that are coming in. And I so appreciate, as you're sharing with us today, that it's not about guilt or shame or blame, like, oh, I'm doing it the wrong way, or oh, I'm stupid, I don't know. It's just like, wait, be kind, be gentle. Just notice where you're at and allow to open up. I mean, it would be like a young child doesn't sit there driving itself crazy because it's not an adult. It's just growing through life. And so here I think you're kind of telling us wherever we're at, ease into that. And boy, there is this pot of gold at the end of the rainbow when you keep moving ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. And now, would you share a little bit, like, how we can find out more about you and books and what you're up to?
Yes, please. My website, first of all, is Grail, like the Holy Grail, grailproductions.com. So obviously the triple W goes first, but grailproductions.com. That's my primary website. And from there, anybody can order books from our office, or they can find out about my tours and itinerary. I'm usually on tour, you know, somewhere each month in the country. It could be, I think, in a few weeks I'll be in the Boston area, traveling all through there, Cape Cod and Boston and so on. But I'm in Sedona teaching at the Unity Center there quite often, and then sometimes on the road. So they can find out from my itinerary where I am and what I'm doing. And they can also read articles that might be helpful to them if they can't get to a workshop, which is, you know, not essential. It's just they can read an article, and they can buy books, and there are books. There's an introduction to Tantra and Sacred Sexuality. The introduction is a much more soft read. It's really the heart of sacred sexuality, the philosophy, the spirituality of it. The other book on the same topic, Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living Bliss, has a lot of that, what the little book has, but a lot more technical. It has anatomy, physiology, energy systems, techniques, exercises, all to do, you know, for enhancing the sexual experience. So there's those two on those topics. And I have You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. That's really about understanding why things change and so forth in our lives, be it a job or a relationship. Why these things change and what to do, how to go through the process of personal transformation a day at a time. So it's the five stages of transformation and how to turn what would typically be just the cycles of change into learning to, yes, something comes to an end, but how to recycle it to a higher level and learn to kind of rebirth it, be born again and rebirth it, to learning to do more things with spiritual guidance instead of from the little self that'll only get you in the same mess that you got in the first place. The first book I wrote, which is really essential, is The Seven Initiations on the Spiritual Path, and that's subtitled Understanding the Purpose to Life's Tests. And so that's really about just what it says. It's learning to understand why, how this universe works, the whys and hows things, you know, whys and hows as to what goes on in our lives, and it's very, you know, pretty insightful. So those are examples. I don't know, I can't remember if there's others. Oh, I wrote Healing the Heart and Soul that just came out about 6 months ago. And that's really a deep, that's really for healers, counselors, or anybody that wants to know more deeply how anything that goes on in our lives, physical, emotional, whatever, financial, there's how to really track down the deeper significance and where it came from, how to heal that, but not just for that one day, that one thing, that one purpose or topic, how to heal the consciousness so that we can, you know, live from a much higher level. It's kind of like a more advanced version of You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up. So it kind of takes everything in that book to a whole nother level. And that's just come out. And sometime this year, I'll finish a book on relationships. And that'll be, that should be out probably in 6 months.
Ah, okay. And then people can schedule, I guess, private sessions with you or...
Yes, that's right. If I'm in the town they're in, they can have a one-on-one, but they can also do phone sessions. They can call my agent, the booking person, Angela, at 830 830-265-0197. So 830-265-0197. That's Angela. She does the bookings for my tours and my sessions. And then one other thing is that I also get out a couple times a year to conferences. I enjoy speaking a couple times a year anyway at conferences. And this year in June in South Florida, there's what's called the Spiritual Awakening Conference, formerly called the Universal Lightworkers Conference. That is absolutely, hands down, the best conference I've ever been to. It's the best expo conference. There's not even a close second. It's the way it's designed, the way it's done, and the quality and the caliber of speakers, it's just fantastic. But it's not one of those where it's real expensive. It's not one of those, nor is it one where you go and you have 50 speakers and you have to choose one or two to see and the rest you lose out on, you know. This is everybody gets to do everything together and take everything in, again, like that, slowing down. Hear every speaker, learn from everything, you know, really experience and share. It's very, very beautiful. And then they have another one, I think, in, if I'm not mistaken, November in San Diego. So one's on the East Coast, one's on the West Coast, and it kind of doesn't matter which one because a lot of people just travel. I think it's about 50% people traveling that go to this conference and about 50% locals. So there'll be one June, one November, and people should really, your listeners could really do well to mark their calendars, put the time aside. It's usually only like a few hundred bucks for the whole weekend. And what I would do is, if they call, like, you know, it's one of those, call now. If they call right away, there's an early bird deadline. I can't tell you exactly what the date is. I just know that there is an early bird deadline right now. And I believe if you talk to the persons, you know, that take the calls and all that, they will also allow, like, not only an early bird deadline, I think if you'll ask them, just say you heard one of their speakers on the radio or at a lecture, whatever, you know, wherever it was they heard of it, and they'll usually give you a little extra discount just because you said, I heard one of your speakers. So you just say, like, is there a speaker discount? And then you can get that if you can tell them where you heard it, you know,
sure.
And who you heard it from.
Okay.
So that would just make it even less expensive. It's just great. It's affordable.
Wow.
It's great. It's the best of. You get Don Miguel Ruiz, and you know, this is the conference where Greg Braid and Doreen Virtue launched their speaking careers. This is, you know, but Don Miguel, Dan Millman, Alan Cohen has always got great, great speakers. And yet there's a theme to those speakers. They have to be good speakers. They have to be great with an audience. And they have to also have a certain integrity or spiritual kind of a focus rather than just there to sell the book or just there to talk about a subject. There's got to be a greater depth. So check it out.
Oh, my gosh, this is great. Thank you, Michael. We've blazed through our time, and I just so appreciate. So check all that out, listeners. This is just a fabulous opportunity. And, of course, happy Valentine's Day to you, Michael, beloved listeners, as we bring their love into our lives in a very sacred way. And until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now. Let go and let God, let myself.